Welcome to this podcast about the fabulous Bonsai House in Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Coota. I'm Helen Jeremy from the Friends of Brisbane Botanic Gardens and Sherwood Arboretum. Dale Ardwison, the former curator of the Mount Coota Gardens, was the first guest on our podcast series celebrating the 50th anniversary of the gardens. After we made that recording, it was obvious to us that there's a whole story to tell about the Bonsai House. So Dale is back, and we're going to be joined by David Corder, the president of Bima Bonsai Club. Hello, Dale.
Good morning to everybody. It's lovely to be talking about the Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Coota, just again.
And it's so good to have you back with us. And we look forward to being able to talk about the Bonsai House. And welcome to David Calder.
Oh, thanks, Helen. Great to be here. And I'll have to correct you already. I'm not the president.
Oh.
I'm the vice president.
Oh, you're vice.
So my president would be very perturbed if he heard me call as the president of the Bima Bonsai Club.
Oh, my mistake. So the vice president of the Bima Bonsai
That's
Club,
it.
David Calder. David, how long have you been involved with the bonsai?
Well, it's like many people. We start as young, but, you know, so I was in my perhaps mid-20s when I started doing bonsai. But as I say, like many people, we just do it by ourselves in the backyard, you know. And, of course, we do our best getting books. When I started, the books were, you know, all in Japanese or in Chinese, you know, not like today where you can get on the internet and watch, you know, thousands of YouTube videos on bonsai. There was nothing like that. So, you know, you struggle away in the backyard doing what you can do. But it wasn't really until I joined Bima 20-odd years ago that, you know, your information really escalates in terms of your knowledge about bonsai. Yeah. So it's been a real revelation joining the club.
I suppose a lot of us just think of bonsai as little dwarf plants, but what makes a plant uniquely bonsai?
Well, the art of bonsai, and we call it an art form, different to painting or sculpture in that the bonsai is only finished for a very short period of time before it grows again. You know, they're continually moving and growing. So it's the art of using just normal trees and keeping them small by limiting their growth in a bonsai pot. Okay. And shaping them to how we see, as an artist, what getting the most out of a tree.
It's lovely you say it's an art and you're an artist, because when you go around the bonsai house, it is like being in a gallery and observing all those beautiful shapes and forms, and they're so pleasing to the eye, and yes, you can imagine the skill behind it.
Yes, we get lots of comments, compliments about the actual trees that are in there, yes, and volunteers do their very best to keep them, you know, and keep them healthy and keep them strong, and do a lot of work behind the scenes, you know, before people can see it.
So what sort of involvement has the club had with the Mount Coota Gardens Bonsai House?
Well, I can tell you that up until Dale came along, we had had no contact at all with the trees, with the bonsai. I'm not sure what that was. I know there'd been some contact made in terms of trying to assist the botanical gardens with their bonsai, but that never went anywhere. It wasn't until Dale got appointed to the curator's job that... Now, Dale, you'll have to tell me here. I think it was about 2015 now.
Yep, that's correct, yes.
Oh, right. Dale actually came around to the two clubs in Brisbane. He actually visited the clubs on our normal Saturdays, and put forward that, you know, we might like to get involved in maintaining the collection. And of course there was a few of us who just jumped at the opportunity to get up there, and so we've been going since that time. I think it would have been late 2015 that we jumped at the opportunity, and we go up there every Tuesday morning and spend a few hours working on the trees.
Oh, that would have been marvellous. I can imagine. You were all keen to do that. Yes. And back then it would have been the old bonsai house, which was a lovely display and very popular. I think people were intrigued by the bonsai. Dale, can you tell us a bit about the old house and the old collection?
Yes, certainly. The Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Coota, back then known as the Mount Coota Botanic Gardens, when the bonsai collection first came into the hands of Brisbane City Council, it was a very interesting process whereby this collection, which was put together by the late Len Weber as the cornerstone of this particular collection. And Len had been practicing bonsai for many, many decades and was sort of acknowledged as one of the first real proponents of bonsai. Not the only, but certainly one of the first proponents of developing bonsai in Australia. That this private collection had then moved across through a number of hands into the system, the Ithaca Tape, and had been housed there before the opportunity for it to come across to Brisbane Botanic Gardens or the Mount Coota Botanic Gardens back then. Curator at the time was Ross McKinnon, and jumped at the opportunity to see this amazing horticultural collection become part of the Botanic Gardens. And whilst most people think of Mount Coota as a place of, you know, giant trees and beautiful large vistas and all very large style landscaping, the idea of actually having this incredible piece of horticultural history for not just Queensland, but for Australia to come to the living collections of Mount Coota was something that Ross saw as a fantastic opportunity. And we're very fortunate that Ross and the Brisbane City Council also saw this as well. So the original structure was put together and built, very interestingly, out of rammed earth and steel, I suppose a contemporary look on traditional Japanese horticulture and design of buildings. And opened in 1999. So it was something that I remember visiting and to Brisbane and seeing the bonsai collection, but also then to then have it as part of my remit as the curator of the gardens in 2015 was a fantastic opportunity to tap into one of my secret horticultural backgrounds of myself, which was growing bonsai.
Ah.
So, yes, it was. It was something that, as a child, I was very interested in. Through an interest, I suppose, in my early years of these design, Japanese gardens, and, of course, bonsai. And having bonsais myself, primarily fig bonsais, it was something that I naturally gravitated towards and had a huge interest in.
So why was it decided that a new bonsai house was needed? Because the old one, well, I obviously wasn't involved, but it was a very enjoyable place to visit. So it must have been lacking in some things behind the scenes perhaps the public didn't know about.
Botanic gardens are ever-changing environments and are always going through renewal. When the bonsai house was first constructed, it was of its time, and the visitation to the gardens was, I think, far less than the, you know, million or so visitors that visit the gardens now. The original design was a series of small connecting rooms in two separate wings built adjacent to the Japanese garden. And it was pretty much a showpiece of Japanese design and the bonsai house, following on, I suppose, from the huge success of Expo 88 and the popularity of the original Japanese garden coming across the Botanic Gardens in 1989, just a year after the garden that first appeared at Expo 88. The building had become, I suppose, not really suited to the larger scale that we were receiving. The rammed earth, the construction of the building, wasn't doing too well in Brisbane's subtropical climate, with a series of, I suppose, structural elements. And the collection around the bonsai house itself had grown and matured. And so there was a lot more shade being cast onto the original building by the surrounding vegetation, which included very large bamboos and a range of subtropical trees. And as such, the collection wasn't doing as well as it had done in the past. It was one of the main reasons why I reached out to the Bonsai Clubs and also to Carol, who was one of the original staff members who looked after the collection, to look for some expertise and advice. We were incredibly fortunate that the Bonsai Clubs of Brisbane came to the party and from day one started making huge inroads into refurbishing and re-enhancing the collection that we had. The original Len Weber collection, other trees that had been purchased or donated since then, and the further opportunity to head the collection to a new direction, which rather than just about preserving the past, was looking towards a way that the collection could become relevant to an increasingly urbanised population in Brisbane, where people were, you know, often not having huge yards and backyards anymore, living in townhouses, maybe just having a balcony or a courtyard, and looking for ways that they could have plants in these smaller home settings. And all those things, I suppose, really crystallised with the development or the idea of a new bonsai house, which the Lord Mayor of Brisbane City Council decided that this would be something that could be funded and that would fit very well into the garden's master plan and refurbishment.
The old place, the old bonsai house too, Dale, it had that very, you put it a lot more diplomatic than I will, but it had that unusual scaffolding for a roof. And it looked, you know, I always thought it looked like it was put there ready to, for someone else to come along and can finish it. It looked like it was, you know, it was. It wasn't sort of a roof at all. It was all this, you know, as I say, scaffolding. So, you know, I was really pleased to see the back of that.
Architectural styles are something which you often see very clearly in botanic gardens because they're often, you know, there for, you know, decades, hundreds of years, and often the an architectural style is something which is. Very contemporary at the time, but our tastes do change. But not only that, looking at some of the wonderful collections around Australia, the National Bonsai and Penjing Collection, which was then rehoused at the National Arboretum in Canberra, really showed how beautiful bonsai could be displayed and really inspired us to look not just in Australia but around the world at what were some of the better ways where people can not just display bonsai, but look after it, take photographs of it. And even that had changed dramatically. When you think about 1999, people had cameras. You know, you actually had a camera as a separate thing to your phone. You would develop a film, all those types of things, through to the fact that with modern day phone cameras, people are looking at, they can take photographs that professionals could only take. That visitor connection with the collection was paramount and was one of the key reasons why the new design was inspired and influenced by, I suppose, the modern interpretation of Japanese architecture, but also allowed for the ability to, for the general public to get up, very up close and personal, but still with a sense of respect and distance from the trees themselves. And it was a lot of consultation that occurred with the Brisbane's City Council City Project Office, with our own staff and with the Bonsai Clubs in order to work out what a new design could be to house the collection.
One thing which I always wondered about the old building was how is the security? Because you'd see the collection get locked up at night and you just sort of wondered, you know, whether that was a building which was really secure.
It certainly was secure. However, it doesn't mean that theft did not occur. Unfortunately, public collections are such a thing that some people do feel the desire to take a little bit home with them when they leave the gardens. And unfortunately, with something like a bonsai, which may have great age or very important provenance to it, it's not something, unlike other plants, that you can just go down to the shops and buy another one of the same quality or with that sense of provenance. Theft had occurred in the past. We'd had an overnight break-in that had stolen a number of trees. Obviously, someone knew what they were after and managed to get in. So the design of the new building, it was very paramount to ensure that whilst it was an incredibly beautiful building and perhaps not quite the cage that the old building had become with increased security designs over the past years, but that design of the security wasn't so apparent to visitors coming into it. It's very, very important. These are trees that are significant. Many of the trees you can put some value on them, and that the value often comes down to what a collector would be prepared to pay for that particular tree. So the fact that when you go to places like Japan, bonsais are national treasures. Some of them may be either the design or the creation of an incredibly well-known and respected bonsai artist. Other ones may have existed as bonsai for hundreds of years and may appear in historic photographs, even in artworks that were created 200 or 300 years ago. You will see that bonsai growing in front of you today, appearing in that artwork. So these are not things that are easily replaced. And when you realize, and what I visualized with our own volunteers coming in to help us out from Bima Bonsai and from the Queensland Society, was the amount of love and attention and skill applied to these trees. That's something that the gardens really respected, and showed that not only did we need a new house to better showcase what an amazing collection this was, but to acknowledge and document and preserve these trees and conserve them in such a way that was secure, but that put a lot of respect back onto the way that these trees were being cared and looked after by the wonderful volunteers that were coming in.
The thing about the theft is that, Dale, before I came on board in terms of being a volunteer, we hear these stories about how many trees have actually disappeared from the collection, you know, through theft. And even when I started, we did have a couple of break-ins where we lost a couple of trees, but I can say, touching wood, that since the new bonsai house has been built, we haven't had any theft or break-ins into the bonsai house. So it's very reassuring. And you're absolutely right, you know, the effort that, you know, we put into our own trees, you know, it's not as though you can, as you said, you can go down to, you know, your local nursery and buy something that you've been, you know, you've put a, even if they aren't great bonsai, you know, you've put a lot of love and affection over 20, 30, 40 years into your trees, you know, and for someone to come along and just steal them, it's very, you know, it breaks your heart. And of course, that's what's happening in Japan, you know, over the last couple of years, that that people are now stealing trees from the very, you know, very well-known bonsai nurseries in Japan, and shipping them overseas. And that's why if you go into Japan now, they don't allow you to take any photos in the nurseries, because, you know, it was a bit of a free-for-all. You know, they believe that people were coming in taking photos, and those people were picking which trees they would like to take home. And, you know, taking orders more or less. And they'd break into the nurseries overnight. And Japan is very difficult to... you've actually got to... The law in Japan is such that you've actually got to catch someone in the act of doing it before you can arrest them. You know, it's no use filming them or anything like that, because you can't... that's just the way the law is, because I guess they're such an honest... honest people in Japan, you know, that they didn't have the laws to protect the trees, and a lot of them have now been stolen, to the great frustration of many of the very well-known bonsai masters.
And when we have the trees that are in there, the bonsais, and one of them from the Len Weber collection, was first developed as a bonsai in 1941.
Yes.
The extreme age of those trees, as I said, it's not something that you can just go down to your local nursery and buy again.
Yes.
Many of these trees are irreplaceable due to the age, due to the person who's worked on them and their connection to that. They are as valuable to me and to many people as artworks in an art gallery and pieces in a museum that have extremely important provenance and history. And so when these trees have that connection with the history of bonsai in Australia, I say we are so incredibly fortunate that a public collection, you know, this is the largest publicly owned collection of bonsai in Australia, which is managed and owned by Brisbane City Council for the people of Brisbane. To have this incredibly new and beautiful bonsai house that allows the people of Brisbane and visitors to Brisbane to get up close and personal with these amazing trees. You just see the joy in visitors when they arrive. It really has become the along with the Japanese garden, the bonsai house has become one of the must-dos of visiting Brisbane and visiting the botanical gardens to see this amazing collection. And it's something that Brisbane should be incredibly proud of, to realise that this is something that is owned by the people of Brisbane, you know, via Brisbane City Council, and that the council acknowledges the extreme importance and value of this collection with development of the new bonsai house.
I can certainly vouch for the number of people that come through, Dale. They're from everywhere, you know, local, interstate people. You know, I guess they're escaping the southern winters. They come up here for the weather, and yes, and so many people from overseas. You know, the groups from China and Europe. And of course, our local kids as well. They arrive in busloads, you know, and they often pull up and as a group and want to talk to you about, you know, bonsai and what's all that wire on them and, you know, how do you keep them small, et cetera, et cetera. So honestly, sometimes you'd hardly get the work done for the number of people who are asking you questions, but that's all part of it. And of course, we're all ready to talk about bonsai.
I think one of the really nice things about the building is that you can have a lot of people in there, but there's still lots of space, and you can still visit a particular plant virtually by yourself and enjoy it. And there's airy spaces, there's that lovely contemplation platform you can go and overlook the Japanese garden.
That's my favourite spot.
Your favourite spot?
I work from there, yes.
Yes. And just a lovely large foyer, so you can have a lot of people there, but it doesn't feel crowded.
No, yes.
Yeah. The building was designed to have that workshop area at the front so that there was an opportunity for the bonsai clubs to have displays, to talk to people about bonsai. So it incorporated into the building. But also the building was designed that not just the special days, but on an ongoing basis. Since 2015, the volunteers have been coming in virtually every week for that entire period of time, which is just phenomenal. But to bring that expertise out into the main building and into the special workshop area where the general public can see how the bonsais are being worked on, that educational element of the Botanic Gardens is what separates it from being just a park, that people can not just see these beautiful trees, but see how they're being created, being inspired and having that opportunity to speak to the volunteers was a critical design element of this building.
It's certainly a lovely spot, that entrance area. And we'll be using that, Dale, on Sunday, because I'm not sure whether you realise it's Japanese Cultural Day on Sunday. And the Mount Kutha has the Panhandle Gardens have a very big festival up there on Sunday. So we will be in that very spot that you just mentioned, working away on bonsai and talking to all the public who come through.
I suppose you're also doing work behind the scenes that we don't see in that second building.
Yes.
Are plants out there sort of for rest, David, or for work? How does that work?
Well, I think... the long-term view is that the trees that are out the back that you don't see will be rosted through into the as they become a little bit more presentable. They'll be brought down, and the ones that are on display will be taken up. Just because there are so many trees that we've got, we can't all get them into the bonsai house. So the idea is that we will do some rotation work to get those trees. But we do an awful lot of preliminary work up there, and we repot and all that sort of stuff up there as well. But that's the idea, I think, the very long-term view is that we will get enough trees that we can just rotate, you know, every once in a while, rotate the different trees through.
there seems to be a lot of thought into what is on display at a particular time from the point of view of so many different styles which are displayed.
Yes.
And I like the information plaques in the entrance foyer where you can see the different styles explained.
Yes.
And then go and find examples of those. And the labels are great too, because they actually tell you that, oh, this is a raft, or which I think must be my favourite. I love that weeping paperbark raft.
Yes. A lot of people do. Yeah. Well, you're not the only one. Yes, a lot of people. And that's not that old, you know.
Yeah.
I think the misleading thing is we try to tell the people as well, you know, they look at this tree and it's quite big, but it was established in, you know, 2022, and I think that couldn't possibly be. Unfortunately, the date is the date that was really put into a bonsai pot, not the actual age of the tree. So it could be, you know, 50-year-old tree, and it's just been put into a pot, you know, last 2 months ago or something, you know. So that's a bit deceiving, but we try to explain that to them as well. But there are lots of different styles, and I think the aim is to not only have a wide variety of styles, but to have a wide variety of trees as well. So over the last 10 years or more, there's been a real push to use our Australian native trees as bonsai. So we are getting into you just mentioned one of the trees. So we are looking at getting more, you know, casuarinas and lily pillies and melaleucas and banksias into the collection to reflect our own native environment, well as the native figs, of course.
Yes, well, I suppose there's azaleas and conifers and maples.
All the exotics.
And yes, there's a lovely flowering bougainvillea at the moment.
Yes.
So it is nice to see the Australian ones coming. Though the Port Jackson figs have been quite old, haven't they?
Oh, yes, they are, yes. There's the collection that, you know, from Len Weber that Dale mentioned were basically the fig trees. I understand these other exotics went elsewhere, but Brisbane inherited many of the fig trees that he had. Mm.
So what's your favourite sort of style of bonsai, David?
Oh, gee, that's a question. It's very difficult to answer. Favourite style, or favourite bonsai even, you know, it's very difficult to answer that question. It's usually the tree that you're working on. Becomes your favourite tree or your favourite style, yes. So I don't really have a favourite style. They all, if they're done well, they all look good, you know.
And another feature about the building, which I think has been a great improvement with the gardens, is the accessibility and connectivity of it. Before it was a little hidden away. Now there's a lovely parking spot there for somebody who might need to park closer, and a easy pathway in, but there's also the connectivity to the Ring Road and the new Queensland Conservation Area, so it makes walking through the gardens and sort of wayfinding quite seamless, and I love the way it's been integrated like that. I suppose that sort of thing was part of the plan from the start, Dale.
Very much so, and that's where City Project Office and the designer Carolyn Spresser of the building worked very closely with the gardens to ensure that it wasn't just another bit of, sometimes we use this word, a bit of plonk, something that's just been plonked into a botanic garden or plonked into a park, which doesn't really have any connection. The new master plan that came out for the gardens and about the development of it talked about a curated experience, so that it would be this seamless wandering through the gardens. One minute you're in Africa, the next minute you're in the desert, then suddenly you're in Japan. That it all was very seamless, that it all connected through, and that it gave you this wonderful experience, this joy of plants all around you. And it's a challenging site. It's on the side of Mount Cutha, and while it's on the lower slopes, there's around about a 50-metre difference in elevation between the lowest part of the gardens and the highest part of the gardens. So a lot of time and effort was spent creating that connection, ensuring that there was an opportunity for virtually everybody that visits the gardens to experience the new bonsai house as well as the gardens. Because when the gardens was first opened, officially in 1976, things like wheelchair accessibility or even mums with prams getting around and the site, and you know, all those things weren't really thought about or weren't really a high priority as such. I know that Brisbane City Council has spent a lot of time and thought making the gardens far more accessible, with obviously the Olympics and Paralympics coming up. It's a priority. And having this building very open and very airy so that you are connected and part of the adjacent Japanese garden, and connected and part of the amazing gardens and trees and plants all around the Bonsai House, meant that it really was quite a seamless fit. And even though it's new, it really feels like the whole garden was designed around it. And that's very clever elements to the building, as well as a lot of the very sustainable elements of the building, using locally sourced materials. The rock for the walls comes just next door at the Mount Cooper Quarry. A lot of the hoop pine design elements in the ceilings come from Southeast Queensland. A lot of recycled timbers was used in the building as well too. So it has a much lighter environmental footprint than perhaps previous structures may have. So all those elements are part of that Botanic Gardens experience to ensure that what you're seeing is real. It's really trying to make a difference in our very urbanised world. And I think that's the real connection with Bonsai that it has with our lives in Brisbane today, and in all of our capital cities where we live, and all of our cities where we live, is that we are living in an increasingly urbanised environment. And Bonsai can be a way that people can bring a little bit of nature into their gardens and into their homes. If they haven't got room for a giant fig tree, then maybe they can have a miniature fig tree in their gardens. And I'm also very excited about the fact that a lot of younger people have now embracing the art of bonsai and learning more about that. And so the art will continue on in future generations, simply because our lives have changed and how we're living is different. And maybe that's why bonsai has always been something that's been quite beloved and expressed as a part of culture in Japan, is that not everyone had these giant gardens or could get out or could own a large piece of nature, in that bonsai was a way to seasonally bring plants from your garden inside into your house for a brief period to enjoy the changing of the seasons. And it can be a great way that people who can't have a yard to have a giant fig tree or a giant native tree, a giant paper bark, can express that by having a smaller plant in that bonsai tradition in their own garden as well.
I think that's all true, Dale. And for me, and what I tell people is, it's a great hobby. You know, if we're going to, you know, that's a hobby for most people. There are very few professionals who bonsai artists in Australia, but for us people who, you know, as a hobby, it's great because it appeals to your horticultural side of keeping something alive, you know, fertilizing and watering and all that sort of stuff. But it also appeals to your artistic side, which is perhaps the hardest bit of bonsai. And it's the most difficult part, I would think, and people struggle with that part of the, but it's the artistic side. And, you know, while you can learn all the horticultural side, it's the artistic side. It's a much more of a challenge, but it's a much more satisfactory part.
Patience must be an element,
yes,
too.
And that's why I think our club has really embraced the educational side of bonsai. You know, we go from a beginner's class, which is free, and it's only a three-hour class, to a fundamentals class, which goes for 5 months, and a more advanced class, which goes for another 5 months. So it takes people through all those different phases of looking after trees and styling and everything that goes with looking after a bonsai.
And you must be, like a lot of gardeners, a very giving people, where you like to share your information and help others along the pathway.
Oh, yeah. Look. We could talk bonsai all day. You know, we're only too happy to talk about bonsai.
Yeah, yes. Well, we'll make sure we put a link to the Bima Club up with the podcast.
Yes, and the other one is the Queensland Society, Bonsai Society. They're involved as well, but both, one's on the south side and one's on the north side, and we're on the north side, but you'll find that, you know, there's big crossover between our members.
Yes.
They both belong to both clubs. Yes.
And how do you manage how many volunteers you can have go to the gardens? Because I can imagine it's a big draw card and something people would like to do.
Yeah. If we don't get that many, really, you know, if someone was to ask me, I would say to contact the Botanical Gardens first, you know, because I'm only a volunteer. And I say, you know, you go through the proper channels. But it does vary. We've probably got a half a dozen people who come up every Tuesday now. Maybe it varies, you know, between four and a half a dozen, four and six people coming up. Yes, and we, you know, happy for anyone to come along, you know, who have varying degrees of skills, you know, and we'll certainly assist where we can in teaching them. But it's not really a teaching area, you know. It's really a maintenance of the collection. Mm. Yes, for first and foremost.
And it's with some of those other opportunities to learn more about bonsai. The bonsai house acts as a portal, so you might come into the bonsai house for the first time and just be blown away by the quality and beauty of the building and the trees in there. You might then decide to come along, as you say, to Japanese Cultural Day or to one of the bonsai shows that are held in the Gardens Auditorium. Or you may even want to visit one of the clubs, if you're on the north side or the south side, in order to then come along. And what I've always found with all of the garden clubs and associations that either have their shows in the auditorium or have the opportunity to have a collection that sort of represents their interests in the gardens. And, of course, the bonsai clubs are no exception to this, of just how welcoming and how willing to share. It's not just like, I couldn't go to a bonsai club meeting because I'm only a beginner. I wouldn't know. I'd feel embarrassed by my little bonsai that I bought at a local garden center, but I'm really interested, but I wouldn't want to go along. It's exactly the opposite. The generosity of sharing knowledge from the volunteers and from the people who are part of all of the garden clubs in Brisbane means that, and of course all around the state, means that there always is that opportunity that botanic gardens are that connection that act as that opportunity for people who are maybe a bit interested but not quite brave enough to dip their toe in. They can have that first initial connection, that discussion, that being inspired by one of the volunteers to talk to them about bonsai can lead to a lifelong addiction. And be careful of that because it can become quite addictive once you start that world of bonsai. Yeah,
it certainly is addictive, that's for sure. And, you know, good luck if you can stick with, you know, four or five bonsai. You know, you're like the rest of us and they ask you how many bonsai you've got and you say too many. That's the usual answer because, yes, you can't stick with two or three bonsai. You end up with, you know, 30, 40 or 50 or a few more than that.
which I suppose is the joy about going to the bonsai house because you get to see some more and enjoy to interact with more when you're in your position,
yeah,
David.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's a good group who go up there. They're all knowledgeable. And as I say, the best part, one of the best parts for me at least, is meeting all the people who are so enthusiastic to talk to you, you know, whether their knowledge is zilch or whether they've got bonsai themselves. You know, they're very, they're very open to discuss with you and, you know, very interested in what you're doing. Yeah, that's really a great joy for me while I work there. Mm.
Well, I think I'd probably be representing all visitors when I say that it's such a beautiful airy building with those design elements of the wood and the bluestone and the internal Japanese garden with its bamboo water feature. Look, it's lovely to be in.
I can't tell you, Helen, how grateful we are for the Brisbane City Council and to Dale, you know, who were really instrumental in giving us this beautiful building. You know, it is a lovely building. I mean, it just blew me away when it was finally finished, you know. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it gives so much joy to so many people. Aww. So you're right. Thank you to Dale and the council for getting it off the ground and also to the Bigma Bondi Club members for their efforts in helping keep things ship shape. It's lovely. Now, if I was going to ask you, David, what the favourite part of the Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Coutha, is.
Yes.
Are you going to say the bonsai house?
Well, I'll extend it a little bit. I would just say the bonsai house and the precinct around the Japanese garden.
Yes.
I just love that area. And every time I go up there, every Tuesday I go up there, I walk through the Japanese garden on my way to the bonsai house.
Getting in the mood.
Yeah, it's such a lovely area. You know, and of course, I love everything Japanese. You know, we go to Japan quite often, and not only the bonsai, but the Japanese gardens I love. You know, and that's certainly for me, the best area of botanical gardens.
Yes. Yes. Well, Dale, I know that you like to sit in the Japanese garden in the rain in the morning light. You mentioned that on our podcast before.
And I'm just sorry to interrupt you, Helen, but I mentioned Japanese Cultural Day on Sunday. Dale, the cherry tree that's in the Japanese garden, it's out, and it'll be out for Japanese Cultural Day, which is a bit of a rarity. Whoever's organised it has timed it perfectly this year.
Yes.
Yes, it'll be absolutely at its peak on Sunday, I think.
It's a beautiful thing to see.
Oh, it is lovely, yes.
So, Dale, you did nominate your favourite part before as changing as times of day change, and your morning in the Japanese garden, preferably in the rain. And there's the exotic rainforest, the Bunya Mountains. They've got any Bunya Mountains, the Bunya Pines area. Have you got any other places you'd like to talk about today?
Oh, well, look, I think the whole garden is incredibly beautiful. I do concur with David. There's that whole precinct around the Bonsai House and Japanese Garden with the amazing mature bamboos, the exotic rainforest. It really, it's the heart of the gardens, the oldest part of the gardens and the heart of the garden, even though it's got some of these newer elements in it, like Japanese garden and the bonsai house compared to the original design. It just all fits together. And I think that's the beauty of the gardens in Brisbane. Mount Coutha, obviously the focus of the three botanic gardens, is that what you see there is a garden that's loved by everybody in Brisbane, loved by the visitors that come. Obviously, the amazing connections that you have with the horticultural community, the passionate staff that are looking after these gardens to make it look just so seamless. Like, you could just walk in and go, wow, this has just happened. This hasn't just been created by anybody through work and sweat and tears. This is all that's come about. And I think that inherent design of the garden as a whole, of that botanic garden, is such a beautiful thing. I was very fortunate to come in to really what was a pretty much maturing garden. The previous staff and curators before me, and the curators and staff that come afterwards, can have that benefit of a young garden, but a garden that's maturing beautifully. And it is an absolute highlight to experience the Japanese garden and the bonsai house really much any time of year. But I think it really is something that just showcases that for many Brisbane residents who haven't been to the gardens generally of late, I always thought winter, spring and autumn were a classic time to visit with the lower light levels, the cool shade. And now with that millennium cherry flowering there in the Japanese garden, it is a perfect time to say, right, this is the weekend we're going to go. Let's, jump in a car or jump on a train and a bus and get there and experience it. And just how lucky the people of Brisbane are that Brisbane City Council is funding these three botanic gardens across the city so that that each offers something different. So get out there and just experience it and just be appreciative of how lucky we all are that the incredible vision that's gone into creating these gardens continues now and into the future.
Yes, I totally agree. And I mean, it is so popular up there now. It honestly, we come away on Tuesdays and the car park is absolutely chockers, with obviously people arriving the first time or the umpteenth time, and the buses have full of kids. It's such a popular area. It's such a beautiful place to come to, especially in those cooler parts of the year that I particularly love. Yes, it's an amazing place, that's for sure, Dale.
Oh, it sure is. Thank you very much, David, and thank you, Dale, for telling us more about the Bonsai House, which is a very special place for lots of visitors. It's been a pleasure having you.
Oh, thanks, Helen. It's great to be talking to you, and thanks for the invitation. Great.
Thanks, Helen, and great to catch up with you again, David.
Yes, too true, Dale.
Well, we'll be having another podcast in our series of podcasts celebrating the 50th anniversary of opening of Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha. So make sure you join us again. The Friends would like to thank the Brisbane Lord Mayor's Community Fund, Councillor Greg Adaman, and Brisbane City Council Libraries for their help in bringing you these podcasts.